Thank you. That was beautiful.
This is Terry McBride's book. And I just wanted to read the passage on the front because it kind of sums it up, doesn't it? It didn't matter that I had an incurable disease. It didn't matter that the odds against my getting well were 1,000,000 to 1. It didn't matter that some of the finest doctors in the world said I couldn't expect to come out of this ordeal whole. I was done listening. If you have not picked up this book, pick it up on the way out, really. This is pure science of mind, folks. This is a story of transformation and triumph by aligning with the principles that we hold dear, the spiritual principles that we know that Ernest Holmes taught and were taught by the ancients, you know, New Thought, ancient wisdom. This is pure science of mind. And it's a story of wrestling with the angel until the blessing occurs. And that's what Terry did. He just wrestled, and with what? With our own consciousness, right? We wrestle with our own consciousness until we are absolutely in alignment with these spiritual principles and the blessings pour forth. It's a story of triumph. It's a story of transformation. It's a story of Terry McBride. It's an amazing science of mind story. Get the book, listen to the man. Please welcome Terry McBride.
Welcome to Vision, the Center for Spiritual Living. Whoever you are, wherever you've been, you're welcome here. You're safe, and you are loved. What an honor it is for me to stand in your presence. Yesterday, Patty picked me up from the airport. We had lunch. We spent hours together. We laughed. We giggled. We explored science of mind. I went away from that time with her inspired and reminded. And this morning in meditation, I got. Yesterday, you were in the presence of a master. She told me about how you created this space. I've been in this a long time. I've had a lot of teachers who are in the physical body, like Thomas Grinder over here in the corner. Good to see you, Thomas. I've had some teachers that were not in physical form. I've witnessed demonstrations of health, demonstrations of love and relationships in, you know, creating reality. But what you did to create this space, the consciousness of you, the congregation, it's not just Patty and John, it's you, the congregation, the people, and how you hold this center that allowed this to be created. And I want to acknowledge you. That's consciousness. That's the idea that consciousness creates reality. This morning we're going to talk about the wonder, the joy and wonder of choice. And I invite you to get underneath the words, get underneath the stories, I might say. And if I say something a little different than you're used to, please forgive me that. Because my intention here this morning is to remind each of us that we are the essence of God. And the rest we get to make up. And for me, that's the joy and wonder of choice. And I invite you to explore choice, because from my position, choice is your greatest power and it is your greatest responsibility. You have the ability to choose. Many of you are familiar with my story. You know, when I was 22, I had a spinal fusion after a year of alternative kind of stuff. During surgery, the spine got infected with E. coli bacteria. This was over 50 years ago. E. coli is a bad bug. It was worse then. The only way to get it out was cut it out. After 6 surgeries, I was referred to the University of Washington Hospital. They said I had the worst case of osteomyelitis of the spine they'd ever seen. They said, Terry, it's now spread up and down your spine. It's not just in the 2 vertebrae that were fused. This is in your bone, throughout, around your spine, up and down. It's followed both your sciatic nerves into your thighs. It's in your pelvic area. It's in your abdomen. We got to go cut it out. So the night before surgery, 6 doctors came into my room. Orthopedic surgeon from England, supposed to be the number 3 guy in the whole world. That's what the residents and interns said. The chief of infectious disease, the chief of general surgery, and their residents. We're going to start from here, go up around your belly button, go up your sternum, open all that up, clean it all out, separate your organs out of the way, get down the spine, we'll chisel and scrape the infection out of your spine. When we're done with that, we're going to roll you over, and your orthopedic surgeons are going to start from the back. You're going to start way down here, as low as they can go between your buttocks, up mid-back. We'll open that up, chisel and scrape the infection out of your spine. When we're done with that, 2 teams of surgeons are going to start at your belt line and open up both your buttocks and follow your sciatic nerves. And when we're done with that, we're going to tip you up and come in between your scrotum and rectum. We're pretty sure you're going to lose the use of your left leg through nerve damage. Then he went on and said, you're probably going to lose some mobility of your right leg. There's a good chance you're going to lose the control of your bowels and your bladder, and there's a good chance you're going to end up sexually impotent. It was days before my 24th birthday. When I talk to you about this philosophy we call science of mind and your absolute authority on this physical plane, it isn't because I read a few books. And I read a few books. And it didn't happen overnight. In the beginning, everybody said, don't give up, stay with it, all things are possible if you believe they are, the faith of a mustard seed, all that stuff. But after the 10th surgery, after the 11th surgery, after the 15th surgery, after the 18th surgery, they changed their mind. It seems even in our model that if you fail enough times, in come the perhaps models. Perhaps God has a bigger plan for you than you just getting your ego-centered desires. Perhaps this is some sacred contract you made before you came in. Perhaps this is some karmic debt. Perhaps this is, you know. When they sent me to see a psychiatrist, he said, look, this is the reality you can face. This is your prognosis. And I said, I don't want to believe like you. I didn't want to make him wrong. By that time I learned you make a doctor wrong, they'll get even with you. So I just said, I don't want to believe like you. I want to be well. I wanted to go to the bathroom the way I used to go to the bathroom instead of in a plastic bag attached to my hip. And he looked at me and he said, Terry, that's your ego talking. You want to use these principles, you've got to be willing to stand boldly in the face of insurmountable obstacles and say, I will not be denied. But where? Where can you go? where can you look to for support? Welcome to Vision. Whoever you are and wherever you've been, you are welcome here. You are safe and you are loved, and we will teach you about the tools of choice. That's why the name of my book is The Hell I Can't. I didn't know I could win. But my Uncle Larry taught me when I was young. He said, son, there may come a time in your life when you have to fight. I'm not talking about a barroom fight, although Uncle Larry was in a few of those. He said, I'm talking about a real fight, and you may not know whether or not you can win, but you will know when you have to stand and fight. That's what this center offers us, not just how to, when it's pretty and when it's wonderful, and how to have more of that, and the songs, and to walking in the room and feel hugged and loved by people, just the way you are. But if there is a challenge, if you come up against the big one that says you cannot win here, you will find sisters and brothers that say, I'll stand with you. I'll stand next to you as we figure this out. There are principles you can use. You can take charge of your creative mind. Not right away, but in the beginning, I began to get little glimpses. First, it was Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. He said, you have a self-image, and all your attitudes, beliefs, and even your opinions are consistent with your self-image, and you can change your self-image. If I can change my self-image, maybe I can change my beliefs. I began to explore this idea that consciousness creates reality. And over the years, I found what I call new thought. New thought is that philosophy that has two basic premises. One, you're a spiritual being. And two, consciousness creates reality. And out of that new thought, as I explored these different books, then I moved in and found Ernest Holmes, one of the great teachers of New Thought. One of the modern-day Christs. The great ones. And I remember when I first read his book, Living the Science of Mind, he was speaking about these two principles. You're a spiritual being, and consciousness creates reality. You're a spiritual being, and as you believe, so shall it be done unto you. On page 121 of Living the Science of Mind, Ernest says, whatever you believe to be true about God, declare it to be the truth about yourself. He didn't, now listen to how, listen, I love how he uses words. He didn't say, accept it. He didn't say, because when you're down at the bottom looking up, it's hard to accept it. He said, stand boldly and declare it the truth about yourself. Whatever you believe about God, declare it to be the truth about yourself. And as I read and studied more and got into what he was saying on page 180 of Living the Science of Mind, he says, our union with the divine is not that we are one with God. It is not that we are one in God, for these imply separation. He said, our union with God, the truth, is that you are of God. Some part of this infinite presence that we grew up calling God, and it might have been different than we do here. I was that spiritual being. Every cell of my body was a unique expression of that. Ernest is real clear. He says, you are the personification of that which is God expressing as woman. God expressing as man. That's the first truth. You are a spiritual being. And it's much bigger than this cutesy little phrase we have on our refrigerator that says, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. No, this is your God. You are that divine presence. And the power of this divine presence is already available. That's what I loved about Ernest. Ernest didn't come in and say, well, when you forgive enough, then the power is available. When you let go enough, when you're willing enough, when you, you don't hold your palms up, have your feet in the floor, you know, all that stuff. He says, right now, this infinite presence moves through your consciousness. You do not have to change for the infinite power of creation to back up your belief system. It already does. What does that bring us back to? The joy and wonder of choice. I can choose a new belief system. When I got it, on page 15, or chapter 15, I didn't have a center like this. That's why I was weeping this morning as you were singing, as you were greeting people. I remember that when I first walked into my Science of Mind church, I was already 19, 20 surgeries into this thing. And I walked in, and they didn't have a statement like yours, but it was the same thing. And I read on their statement of purpose, it says, we believe in the healing of the sick through the power of this mind. We believe in the control of conditions through the power of this mind. And I remember sitting in the back, reading that, and tears. And I thought, I'm not alone anymore. But this was earlier, when I was alone, laying in the same hospital bed that I had been in throughout the years. And this is what chapter 15 ends with. As I lay there in bed, I knew it didn't matter how long I had been sick or how beat up my body was. I had an experience of the truth that set me free. I had found at last this human aspect of me. I called my belief system controlled the power of creation itself. That's the center of this center. That's the heart of what Ernest Holmes talks about. You're already holy. You're already magnificent. You're already powerful. If your life isn't working the way you want, then here's some tools you can use to change your consciousness. You don't have to become worthy. You're already worthy. You're already the most magnificent idea God holds. And from that, we move into the second principle of new thought, and that is that consciousness creates reality. On page 122, Living the Science of Mind, Ernest says this, the power within you is the law, an aspect of the divine that is an all-powerful medium. And you have the power to use this medium any way you see fit. Any way you see fit. Your priorities, your aspirations. I remember telling the psychiatrist, I don't want to live in a wheelchair. I don't want to spend my life in a wheelchair. And he said, Terry, you have to accept your human limitations. You have the power to use this medium any way you see fit. And he goes on page 169, says, therefore, you may know that everything you do, everything you say, everything you think carries with it divine authority. That's what Patty offers us here. That's what Science of Mind offers. And I want to tell you that I travel all over in a lot of Science of Mind centers, and they don't always get down to that, because when push comes to shove, they want to back up a little bit. Some of them even want to encourage you to accept the things that you cannot change. Not Patty. She stands boldly in the truth of this philosophy. You're a spiritual being, and the rest you get to make up. The Hindu teachings. This is not new. Ernest didn't make this up. This is what he says. This is not new with me. In the Hindu teachings, there's a wonderful book. It's out of print now. It's called The Magic and Mysticism of India. And what it says in this idea of consciousness creates reality, it says on page 39, it says, in the Hindu teachings, It is held that there exists a universal mental principle which is known as creative mind. Sound familiar? Its essence and elementary character may be described as being something like the blending or combination of imagination and will. Each person is possessed of a portion of this creative mind and is able to use it to create there in material form the reproduction of that which he or she has previously created in ideal form in their mind. This is the Hindu teachings. This stuff's been around thousands of years. It goes on and it says, in other words, the Hindu teachings hold that the mind, when disciplined enough, has the power of materializing physical creation directly itself without the need for physical activity. Pick up your bed and walk. Be ye transformed. Water to wine. Not that that might be important to some of you, but in the old days it would have saved a lot of us a trip to the 7-Eleven. In other words, the Hindu teachings hold that mind, when disciplined enough, has the power of materializing physical creation directly itself without the need for physical activity. The achievement of this is said to be part of humankind's mental inheritance to be used when we evolve and discipline ourselves sufficiently to make use of this God-like ability. It's about moving to. Stephen Hawking, who you mentioned, who just passed last week, one of his quotes is, he says, the only certainty about the infinitesimally small quantum building blocks of our universe is that they are uncertain. He goes on and he says, simply by observing them, you can cause them to change. Then he says, they seem to be a physical embodiment of probability and potential. This is physics. This is science. That the smallest particle that makes the universe is waiting for somebody to make a choice. Waiting for somebody to observe it or create it, declare it, demand it, those words, whatever it would be for you. This is what we're talking about here. This is not, you know, pie in the sky stuff. This is real world, the great mystical teachings of history brought together with the sciences, and now it's coming that ultimately says you must be holy because you have the ability to create form. Made in the image and likeness of God. That's what this is about. Ernest puts it this way on page 20. We are surrounded by creative mind, which reacts to our thinking. The sum total of all our thinking decides what's going to happen to us. We can change our thinking and cause the power that has heretofore bound us to now give us freedom. What more could we ask? What more could we be given? That is what this philosophy is about, embodied in change your thinking, change your life. But it's deeper than that. You get to create form. You have absolute authority. Of course, if you say that, people will say, who do you think you are? And it's challenging for most of us to look them right back in the eye and say, I think I'm God expressing uniquely as me. I have found that people don't always appreciate that when I answer that question. That's why I'm working on being able to shoot blue-white flame off my finger. And then when they say some negative thing, I'll go, whoosh, zap. And they go, whoa, what was that? And I'm going to say, that's the power of God. Don't irritate me. The tools that you are given here are about changing consciousness. And through that, through your demonstrations, this is what Ernest is talking about. Look, this is the truth about who you are, but you will not experience it unless you can demonstrate it. Theory is cheap. This podium is God-informed. The piano is. The difference is you can know it. And the way that you begin to experience, the way that you know it, Ernest says you must demonstrate it. You must use these principles on yourself first. before you go to use them on somebody else, because you must prove to yourself that this stuff works. That's why I stand up here and speak with such authority. I had 27 major surgical procedures. They did things to my body a person's not supposed to recover from. I'm 74 years old. And I just got a new doctor and went in and I brought in some of my medical records, and after she got done, she just shook her head and she said, "There's no way you're as healthy as you are with all this stuff." She said, "How did you do it?" And I said, "I turbocharged the placebo effect." Doctors tend to go, "Oh, they don't know what the hell you're talking about," but they tend to, "Oh," instead of going, "Mm." Anyway. Change your thinking and change your life. And it involves more than a few positive thoughts and holding your palms up so you can be receptive. Because the God you seek is within. Who are you receiving from? Anyway, the tools are simple. Focus. First one is focus. What is your focus? The brain is always busy. It's always doing something. And most of what it's busy about is what we grew up thinking it should be busy about. And so the first choice is focus. What do you want? What do you want to move to? What do you want to experience? How do your body want to work? You know, whatever it is, you have absolute authority. And most of us aren't into the focus. We don't have a specific, this is what I want, this is how it's going to be demonstrated. We go, "Oh, well, you know," we listen to that stuff. Don't be too specific. God may have a different plan for you. That's fine unless you're in the hospital and somebody comes in and says, "Hey, God's plan for you is for you to live in a wheelchair and go to the bathroom in a plastic bag." All of a sudden you're willing to say, "Wait a minute, I'm not sure I want God's plan." The first job for you and I is decide, what do you want? What are you moving to? The cornerstone, the first quote I ever got about Ernest Holmes, he said, "Metaphysics is the conscious and practical application of spiritual thought force in the creation of solutions." I had been spending all these tools working on my disease. And what he said, what I got from that was, when are you going to start focusing on creating health? What is your focus? What are you moving to? What do you think about? Patty and I were talking about when she gets up in the morning, she does gratitude. She gratitudes about her body and how it's working and all that stuff. That's what focus is. The next tool you have is choice of actions. What do you think you need to do? Ernest Holmes says, treat and move your feet. Do your mental work and move your feet. Get the job done. The problem with trying to figure out what do I need to do is that everybody out there in the metaphysical community knows that the next important step, other than, you know, getting clear on what you want, is what do you think you need to do? So they write the books, the 10 this, the 8 this, the 16 this, the 3 this, the 47 this, and that's where we get, hold your palms up, breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, hold your kundalini energy, open your crown chakra, and we're so busy with all that stuff, we never go inside. The action you do isn't important. It's your belief in the action that gives action power. You must go inside. You must go inside and spend time with yourself or with a practitioner. Help them pray about, what do I think I need to do? Because when you're focused on what you want and doing what you think you need to do, the universe supports you. So the first two, focus and actions, get those aligned. The next tool, how I talk about, is choice of mental environment. What do you mind? Because I don't know about you, but my mind chatters. It doesn't chatter, it talks a lot. It's just an ongoing dialogue. And so when Ernest talks about change your thinking, change your life, he's not just talking about change how when you're consciously addressing somebody else, he's talking, change what's going on in your mind. So what happens when you begin to integrate the tools of choice? You get clear on your focus, you get clear on your actions, and then you do your treatment work or affirmations or self-talk, whatever you want to call that. And how I teach it is, do your self-talk to support yourself doing what you think you need to do. And what happens, these start to work together. And this is what, in my opinion, this is what the Hindus are saying, that this combination of creative mind is made up of your personal will and your imagination. Your personal will is made up of your focus, your actions, and your thoughts. And when you get all of those aligned and working together, essentially, get under the words, essentially you've taken charge of your personal will. And then you add the fourth tool, which we call visualizations, or what the Hindus talk about is taking charge of the image-making part of your mind. And a lot of people have trouble visualizing. Because they, just go visualize the end result without any concern about how to get there. And when people do that, all the gabbats come. Yeah, but what about this? What about this? I don't need to worry about that stuff. And the mind goes, you want to bet? What you do, but when you are clear on your focus, when you know the path, the roadmap you have, and you're doing affirmations or treatment work supporting you, following through, when you go to visualize, all you have to do is daydream about these three pieces you've put together. Daydream about your focus. Daydream about how you're following through with these action steps. Daydream about whenever you think about this focus and these actions, this is what your mind is thinking, and it becomes easy to daydream about it. And what happens, you've integrated the tools of choice. Candace Pert, in her book, The Molecules of Emotion, says, when you do this from yourself, from internally, what do I want? What do I think I need to do? What thoughts do I need to support me? When you bring those together and then spend time in your imagination, you create an underlying integrity of purpose. And she called that faith. This philosophy isn't just about the love and what we share here on Sunday morning, which is life-transforming, but the classes, the workshops, working with practitioners, talking with other people who've been in this, allow you to begin to take these various pieces of what we call consciousness and put them together in such a way so that you begin to believe in the desires of your heart. I remember being engulfed with disease. Holes in my colon, tubes down my nose, and laying in the hospital bed, knowing that I was going to get well. That's what this offers you. It's not just about creating belief or positive expectancy. This philosophy is about creating knowing. I don't know what challenges you might have. I don't know how wonderful your life is going. What I know is how absolutely powerful you are and how you can begin to direct that power to create the desires of your heart so that you get an experience of who you are, which moves back into applying the tools and getting an experience. And as you do that, it is my belief that human existence becomes what that Jewish mystic a couple thousand years ago, who taught a lot of good stuff, but when they backed him into a corner and said, why are you come? Why are you here? And he said, I have come that my joy might be in you and your joy might be full. This philosophy and what it offers us is to begin to experience human existence as a glorious, joyous adventure. Welcome to vision. Whoever you are, and wherever you've been, you're welcome here. You're safe. And you are loved.